I'm Derek Russell.
And I'm Brad Locke, and this is The Memo.
A gathering of all things Northeast Mississippi, brought to you by The Daily Journal and DJournal.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome in to The Memo, a new episode.
You've changed how you do that, and it throws me off every time.
Well, I felt like I was becoming too stale in my intros.
You just sound like you walked into a party an hour late. Hey, everybody.
I'm here.
What, we weren't getting ready at 8?
Is it over?
Where's everybody going now that I'm here?
Where's the queso?
I've seen that happen with you one time. I've seen you show up late to something and everybody leave. Well, Brad's here.
I'm usually early to parties. Usually too early.
Yeah, you're that guy.
that one time that we had a birthday party for Lauren and I showed up like an hour early.
I don't know. I probably wasn't invited.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's fine.
Just saying, I got the time wrong.
You're just out.
So I went back home, and then
I thought it was just we ain't got anything better to do, so I thought I'd show up. Did you bring anything? Nope. Got any crackers
and mayonnaise?
I'm gonna eat a whole sleeve of Ritz and your Miracle Whip.
No, it's gonna be saltines.
Saltines and Miracle Whip.
Hellman's is fine.
Hellman's. The blue lid was preferable.
That's good stuff.
Because when a man is choosing saltines and mayonnaise, he has to be specific in which kind.
And I'm very excited about the saltines I'm going to be able to start buying when Aldi opens up. Best saltines on the planet.
You're just going to go to that store just buy saltines. To get saltines. I'll take all your saltines. Sir, we don't open for another hour.
Load up the cart.
I'll be here. I just want them now.
Load up the cart. Yeah.
Just give me all the saltines.
So good.
Sir, there's a 2 saltine limit. Good, I brought all of my children.
That's the reason we have so many.
That's why we had so many, in case an Aldi
Daddy
ever
likes saltines.
Here. Daddy likes the saltines.
It's been...
Your 8th kid's name is Nabisco.
It's been 15 years since we lived somewhere with an Aldi, so I miss those crackers.
Okay. I know, you've been planning.
I have.
Like I'm going to take down the whole system from the inside. It's just a gigantic heist.
Yes.
Your last kid's name is Nabisco. Nabisco. How you doing today?
Me? I'm great.
Yeah. Well, that's good. Chris, how are you?
I'm more chipper than I have any right to be.
No, why is that?
I don't know. Probably just the chemical imbalances in my brain. I don't know.
Fine. You're just excited about Aldi.
I am. Excited about that. Hey, by the way, I have another ghost story to tell you. Okay. This one involves the 22-month-old. And some people will contend that very young children can actually see ghosts.
Babies and...
There might be something to that.
Babies and animals.
So, my wife... I was not there when it happened. My wife tells the story. Someone
secondhand information.
No, my wife, she's a very truthful person. So, I'm trying to remember it best I can. I mean, Ellie is obsessed with, like, ghosts anyway. She's really gotten into Scooby-Doo now, just mainly because there's a ghost on every episode, just about. And so she's got a little stuffed ghost. So, like, ghosts are her thing right now. But, like, that probably explains it, but...
Maybe that's why she's so into them.
Yeah.
She's got a pet ghost at home.
The other day, she was saying something about a ghost, and my wife asked her where the ghost was. She pointed toward the door that goes into the garage, where we usually come in. And... was like waving to it or something, and then at some point she acted like she was bringing the ghost over to where she sits in the living room and was telling it to sit down and watch TV with her. She was acting like the ghost was right there.
Well, that could also just be an imaginary friend.
That's what I'm thinking.
But weren't all imaginary friends ghosts?
But it's still kind of freaky a little bit.
My best friend talks about his imaginary friend when he was a kid. It was the Hawaiian Punch guy.
Hawaiian Punch guy.
Whose name was Jeffy.
Jeffy. I don't know if that's his name.
It's not. He was borderline copyright infringement in having him as an imaginary friend.
I don't think I ever had an imaginary friend.
I don't think I didn't have any real ones either.
I just imagined that real people were my friends.
That's where I was at.
And that they would hang out with me when
Tom.
I was alone.
Hey, please leave me alone. Please don't make eye contact with me.
Yeah.
You had a bunch of kids, so you would have friends.
I had very few friends
and
growing up.
And take down Nabisco from the inside.
I was a bit of a loner. Maybe antisocial Dottie. Would be a good term.
I'm a loner, Dottie. A rebel.
What?
You don't know that. It's from Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Oh, I've seen that. It's just been like 20-something years.
It's one of the finest films
I haven't checked out the reboot or whatever. Isn't it on Netflix or something?
It's a reboot. It's just another
Pee-wee, but it's got Paul Reubens.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, I need to go check that out.
It's... It's better than Big Top Pee Wee.
Okay.
Anybody remember Big Top Pee Wee? Anybody?
I don't remember if I saw that one. I probably did.
I don't.
Good day here on the memo when I'm making references that nobody knows. And
I recently saw the Lego Batman movie. It's really good.
Brad's taking down cracker companies from the inside.
Saw Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children. That's pretty good.
That?
Pretty good movie. I enjoyed it.
Didn't Burton direct that?
He did.
Another Tim Burton hit.
Yeah.
Lego Batman was excellent.
It was. I loved it.
Some people in this room got invited to see Lego Batman but didn't go.
Kiefer?
I forgot about that.
He said he was out of town or something.
There's something going on. Yeah, you did invite us. Appreciate
it. I don't think there was.
Hmm.
Like me not getting invited to Lauren's party. So Lauren's taking over my spot on the show, and I didn't get invited to her birthday party. Is this what I'm being told?
I'm pretty sure you were invited.
This was like a couple years ago.
Yeah.
I think it was.
I think that was, yeah.
Brad and I would have showed up early together. Dressed like Dan Aykroyd and Steve Martin from the old SNL days.
Two wild and crazy guys.
We are here to eat your crackers.
Are they from Aldi?
Russia. That's probably why I can't do that joke anymore. Anyway. We got a full show. We should probably get with and stop boring people.
We've got the Morrises on here with us, both of them.
The Mori are joining
us? M. Scott and Michaela.
Oh, well.
Yeah, how about that?
All right, then. Anybody else?
Yeah, we're going to have Caleb Bedillion on here talk about City Hall.
You don't have to say it like that. You could just say it normally.
It's just fun to say. Bedillion.
It's not adding any value to anything.
Bedillion. Also, Emma Kent will be here.
Emma Kent will be here.
Sister of Clark. Just kidding.
What? Oh, I get it.
Actually, that's her married name, Kent. Husband of Clark.
Yeah. No.
I'm telling
that
you.
That would be Lois Lane.
Well, whatever. Wouldn't Lois not change her last name?
Mm-hmm.
She's one of those progressive women.
Yeah, she would. Okay. She's one of those.
Good for her. Good for her. No problem with that.
we'll continue before you dig yourself into a deeper hole this morning.
Michaela Morris is here again. Hello, Michaela. How you doing?
Hey, glad to be back.
Glad you're here. Hey, let's talk about this lengthy story you had.
Very lengthy.
You can find the full version online,
We made Chris Kiefer earn his stripes on Saturday editing it.
Yeah, the story is about senior citizens being able to retain independence and stay at home and not have to go into a nurse.
As they age, yes.
Right. And what's interesting about this is that a lot of these people are falling to the baby boomer generation now.
Well, you've got the leading edge of baby boomers are hitting their early 70s now. Mm-hmm. So most of them probably aren't to the point that they need lots of assistance to stay home, but they are staring down the barrel how am I going to live the rest of my life?
Yeah, and one point you make in this story, and it's kind of true, I mean, that's the generation... Really, the first generation that the youth really had a huge impact, socially speaking, and you know, the don't trust anyone over 30. No, not everybody was that way, but still, you think of them in that way, and now you're like, well, they're in their 70s. That's kind of weird.
Well, you think, there is that irony, but the boomers have reshaped every phase of American life they have passed through.
Yeah,
and I've heard. Basically, this refrain from a number of experts in the field is, why wouldn't they remake the expectations about aging?
Yeah, because they have that spirit where they don't think of themselves as older. They're not going to want to go to a nursing home.
No.
Most
people don't. But this age group is particularly opposed to a lot of... As a generation, opposed to many of kind of the group living kind of situations that you would see. They want to stay home until they have exhausted their options, and then they'd really like to stay home after that.
Yeah, and there's plenty of options. You've got this one. Mm-hmm.
The
Right at Home service that you talked about them.
That's a great service that it really helps people who don't need necessarily skilled nursing care. They don't need a registered nurse coming administering medicines. They don't need that level of care, but they need help with housekeeping, with especially with meals, and maybe even the things that your spouse would do for you if you had been ill. And these are people who have been widowed.
Sure.
Just think about needing to put pain relieving cream on your lower back.
Yeah.
You know, the things that you can't really reach by yourself. Just think, you know, so there are a lot of these services are emerging. If you had the forethought and the resources to purchase long-term care insurance, they are usually things that can be paid for through those, which is what Mr. Ford, who graciously shared, led us into his home and shared some of his situation with us.
Yeah, yeah.
It works very, very well for him. But for families trying to make a decision, this could also be something that is much more affordable than a skilled nursing care facility like a nursing home or even assisted living.
Yeah.
That this could be, I talked to the owner, Carla Strickland, mm-hmm. and they have people, these kind of services really offer a range of services that can be matched up to what people need. So, for example, they have some people who have caregivers come by 3 times a week, maybe for a total of about 6 hours. So they like go. They use that as their time to go shopping or help with the heavy things that they can't move by themselves, or maybe changing some light bulbs or things like that. Other people, they might need people more frequently. They need somebody to check on them twice a day. And it's a real peace of mind for their families who may not live locally, or they may be trying to balance work or children's activities, because a lot of people in their 50s and 60s are getting kind of sandwiched between raising teenagers or supporting young adults and caring for their parents. So they need some extra sets of hands to make everything happen.
Yeah, and that's obviously a big help. And there are other resources, too, I know. I mean, you got Medicaid, obviously, but then you've also got Meals on Wheels, for instance. Talk a good bit
Meals
about that.
Meals on Wheels provides a great service for people who can't get out anymore, and they're really cost-effective. Three Rivers Area Agency on Aging provides one Meals on Wheels service that gives people frozen meals once a week. The Lee County Meals on Wheels, which is operated by Methodist Senior Services, takes people a hot meal 5 days a week. So again, and these are free services that are very low cost, that leverage volunteers, and they really can make a big difference. And it gives folks who can't get out, because transportation is a huge issue, is that for people who are otherwise okay, this gives them a friendly face and someone who can check on them, and if they're not all right, they can help get them help. And it gets them a hot meal. And nutrition is a huge issue for folks in maintaining their health, because often what they see is that people might kind of lose interest in cooking, or it's not safe for them to cook. Like the Norrises, they both have vision issues, so they don't need to cook on the stove. So without Meals on Wheels, they would be having sandwiches for lots and lots and lots of meals. And their family is already helping them kind of around the edges, but it would really increase the load on their family to the point that their family might need to say, okay, maybe we need to do something else. Maybe you need to move in with us. Maybe we need to move to a different place. And this lets them stay independent in their own home together.
And you've also got like a grocery stores that deliver. I know Todd's has been doing it. Is that something that's kind of a growing trend too?
You think about, we've been hearing this buzz, especially in bigger places, with grocery stores experimenting with this kind of old service that's new again. And Todd's has never stopped delivering to their prisoners who can't get out. And so that's one of the things I kind of discovered in the course of the story.
Yeah.
So you know, they call Todd's, tell them what you want, they'll bring it to you.
Yeah, and I mean, demand for all these resources we've talked about is pretty high. I know the Meals on Wheels has a waiting list.
Yeah,
right?
Meals on Wheels has a waiting list. Shepherd Center, which helps with light home repair and transportation services. You know, there are places that they can help, and then, you know, they're kind of all of these services, nonprofit services, the Meals on Wheels, which is operated in Lee County, both through Methodist Senior Services and Salvation Army, and Shepherd Center, they need volunteers and they need donations help people. But there are great opportunities to help people really around your schedule.
Yeah. Tell me real quick a little bit about this, the Next Age service, Mississippi Methodist Senior Services.
They are launching, they did some research focusing specifically actually on Lee County and Lauderdale County, mm-hmm. trying to pinpoint what were the needs of older adults at home. And they found that people needed help with transportation. Mm-hmm. They needed help with home maintenance. They needed help with kind of the daily activities of living, like being able to get to the store, being able to cook, those kind of things. And they needed help navigating the healthcare system.
Yeah.
So they are pioneering this next stage that will reach out beyond their campuses in Tupelo. They're kind of best known for Traceway, where they have independent living, assisted living, and skilled nursing care at the greenhouses, that they're really looking to reach people beyond their campuses, because that's one where people want to be and often where they will thrive, but helping them access what they need. So you get those kind of services, that kind of help. And a lot of people don't need a lot of help. They don't need the really expensive skilled nursing care.
Right, right.
They need some help with meals. They need rides to the store and the doctor's office and, you know, maybe out to dinner with their buddies.
Sure.
They need, you know, some idea, and this could be a whole new healthcare career of a medical companion who can help take notes and drive them to the doctor's office, because families are spread so thin. So these things that used to be taken care of mm-hmm. by whatever child had retired by the time their parents became frail.
Mm-hmm.
People are working longer. They don't live close to their parents. They may be juggling kids or young adults as well as a job. So the resources are stretched really thin as we have this huge population bubble headed into older adulthood.
Well, it was, again, a really lengthy, good, in-depth story you had in Sunday's Journal. You can also find it at djournal.com. The headline, and if you're looking for it, Staying Home, Community Resources Help Aging Seniors Retain Independence. Thank you, as always, for joining us, Michaela. Good stuff.
Always, always fun.
Don't forget you can get up and get ready for your day with the Daily Journal's News Break, a quick summary of news, sports, weather, and everything else Northeast Mississippi in a 5-minute video. Easy peasy. George and Wheezy. Hosted by Brad Locke.
Moving on up.
Yeah. It has everything, doesn't it?
What, Newsbreak or the Jeffersons?
Well, both. The Jeffersons had everything, but specifically Newsbreak.
News, sports, weather, whatever else. Entertainment?
No.
Sometimes? Yeah, we've done stuff on like Elvis Fest.
I think we've brushed over entertainment a little bit, but that's fine. It's fine. No big deal. You can watch them each weekday morning at 7 a.m. or at any time at djournal.com, Facebook, YouTube, or the Daily Journal's mobile apps for Apple and Android devices.
And also check out the two sports podcasts we produce here at the Daily Journal. We've got Prep Rally. It's a high school sports podcast with myself and Gene Phelps. New episodes every Wednesday. Find it in iTunes, your podcast apps, or at preprally.djournal.com. So look for a new episode today. And also we have double coverage, an Ole Miss and Mississippi State sports podcast. Ole Miss beat reporter Parrish Holford and MEC reporter Logan Lowry release new episodes each Thursday afternoon in which they provide game previews, insight, commentary, and analysis on the Bulldogs and Rebels. Find it in iTunes, your podcast apps, or at doublecoverage.djournal.com. As I've mentioned before, the guys were both taking some time off, so they'll be back in a couple of weeks or so, just in time for SEC Media Day. So no double coverage this week or next, I believe.
Emma Kent joining us on this Wednesday. How are you, Emma?
I'm good, Derek. I just need some coffee.
Well, I hear you're not up to snuff from other people in the room today. Yeah.
She's struggling.
Yeah, thanks,
God,
Brad.
He just keeps digging a hole today.
I'm just...
He asked earlier if somebody I was describing was one of those women.
No, I said one of those progressive women. I was just
one of those progressive.
Why is that in air quotes?
He did
that.
I didn't do the air quotes.
You just did them
because you did them.
You put them around a different word.
Yeah, whatever.
That wouldn't take, you know, whatever. Take a man's name as their last name when they got married.
I don't have any problem with that.
Like one of those women? You mean women? Jeez. Tell me about Mississippi State University aiding in programs to help rural students take AP classes.
Rural?
That was good.
I had it, and then Brad messed me up.
I need to delete that word from the English language.
Emma, tell us about this new program courtesy of MSU.
Yeah, so they're working with several school districts are working with Mississippi State University to help students in rural districts, as you said.
As you said. I was just quoting you.
Take AP classes because, you know, some schools don't have the resources to provide those classes for their students. And so... So Mississippi State is kind of partnering with them on this. They got a grant, a $200,000 grant, from the Jack Kent Cook Foundation.
No relation?
Oh, to me? No.
Yeah, okay. Just making sure we're putting that out
there. My other
husband.
Oh.
One of those progressive.
I'm one of those women.
Super progressive.
Brad. No, and so... So this, it's a pilot program. This summer, they'll have some students up at Mississippi State taking some courses from, or I guess having lessons from some professors.
But it's also online, so it's,
yeah,
there, it's a
it's
combination.
It's a blended model. So they get to go for this summer and do some stuff at the university, and then they'll take some classes online that'll be taught by those same professors. And then the schools, of course, don't have to pay for that because it's funded through this grant. So there's a couple local districts also participating, Aberdeen, Boonville, and Pontotoc County. So have some local students who will benefit from it.
Definitely. And this is at no cost to those students. That's
no,
great.
Everything's covered by the grant.
From the Jack Kent Cook. It's hard to say. Jack Kent Cook. I think I'd rather say Rural Foundation. Yeah, that was probably better.
From the Rural Foundation.
From the Rural Foundation for Rural. How long do these courses last?
The Summer Academy that they're at this summer is 2 weeks long. And then they'll go back to school and they'll take the online part of the class. And I guess that will last however long, you know, a normal class would.
The course will take
what course would do at their high school, depending on how they do it. But
and reaching far and wide for help teaching these classes, one of the professors, the AP Physics course, will be taught by somebody from Yale.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought that was pretty cool. A renowned astrophysicist.
Yeah.
Fancy.
Which is as far away from the word rural as you can get. Renowned astrophysicist, rural.
Yeah, it is really. When I was reading through this, again, before coming in, I think it's kind of cool that they got someone from Yale, to come to Mississippi State and do this. So it's pretty big deal.
So, and she's actually going to be at Mississippi State. She's not just part of the, she's not a face on Skype.
No, she's there for this 2 week summer academy, and then she'll be facilitating the online.
This is a pilot program, so should it continue to benefit these students, we'll see it grow potentially in the years.
Yeah, I guess if it works out this year, they'll try it again, and if they can get the grant money again, I'm sure it'll be dependent on that.
Yeah, $200,000 is nothing to sneeze at.
Yeah, so not a small amount.
Not a small amount. Brad spent that in saltines last year. So.
Like the crackers?
Yeah.
Saltines are delicious.
He has a problem. Emma, thank you for coming in today. We appreciate you.
Yeah, thank you guys. Brad, share some saltines.
Before Caleb comes in, before you leave, Emma, I've just been handed a bulletin. Brad Locke, some late breaking news out of the Locke household.
My wife just called me, like just now, right after we finished up with Emma.
Is she in labor?
No.
Okay. Well, I don't know. There's so many.
No, she's, we've got...
I didn't even know she was pregnant.
We've got an shut up.
No, really, I want to know what this is.
We've got an update on our haunted house.
Yeah.
You know, we mentioned the story earlier about our almost two-year-old. And, right. You know, she's
inviting
a ghost to come watch TV with her.
Putting the telling the ghost to come in like an air traffic controller and waving it into the couch.
Yeah, basically, yeah.
I'm catching Emma up. She wasn't here.
So
for
just
this.
Now, okay, this morning, just my wife is sitting on the couch doing some paperwork.
Sure.
And Ellie comes up and stands between the couch and the recliner.
Okay.
So she's standing there. There's like this music table that she has. You know what I'm talking about? There's different things.
Brad, that music table's been dead for 40 years.
There's different knobs and switches and everything, and it can make music and little songs. So it's standing over there probably 10 feet away in the corner of the living room. Ellie walks up, stands right there between the couch and the chair, goes. She says, "Ghost?" And right then, that music table goes off.
Yes.
Not a lie. I mean, like that. I don't think she pointed at it, but she was just...
Maybe
my wife wasn't really looking.
Maybe she has the power.
Well, my wife had her head down, but she
like
heard...
She heard the power.
But she heard her say ghost, and then suddenly that music table goes off 10 feet away.
Did she want to hear her say ghost?
And I keep trying to remember if that particular toy of hers has gone off by itself before.
Yeah.
I can't recall. So, that's a little that's freaking me out a little bit.
Ghost, and then just music. I wish I could do that. Just point at the ghost, and music starts playing. That would be like, play it, Sam, and just, you know.
That's good. You want the ghost on your side.
Yeah.
He seems like a friendly ghost.
Yeah.
Okay, he's
that's good.
You know, he seems friendly toward my 22-month-old.
What song did it play? Because that's very important.
Of course, if this is the same ghost that we've had upstairs, that one's been kind of a creeper.
Well, maybe two.
And that one's revolved around...
Yeah, like an upstairs-downstairs situation.
That one's revolved around Charlotte, my second oldest.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
Okay.
It's weird.
All right. Nobody go to Brad's house. Got that? Emma, thanks for joining us.
Yep.
Caleb Medillion coming into the studio now. Caleb, there will be no change to the hierarchy of City Hall in the coming weeks after elections have ended now. I believe Mayor Shelton's taking, if it's not broke, don't fix it approach, right?
That's right, Derek. As was reported about the election results, obviously no changes in the city council or the mayor's office, and the mayor himself is not planning to change any of the positions within his administration that he appoints subject to council approval. So these are positions like chief operations officer, chief finance officer, city clerk, city attorney. That was a position that previously had been contracted out, but now is an in-house position. You know, city prosecutor, city judges, Tupelo Water and Light Director, you go down the list, there are about 14 such positions. Mayor Shelton plans to reappoint all of the individuals who currently hold those positions. That'll be subject to council approval, but all those people have been approved by the city council once, so we shall see if any of them have any trouble the second time around, if they've done anything in the last couple of years to upset the apple cart at the council, so to speak.
Well, and some predate Shelton's administration as well.
That's right. That's right. So, you know, certainly at a state or federal level, when you see new people come in, you know, a president wants to bring in his own cabinet, a governor wants to bring in his own advisors. At the municipal level, you know, that's quite often you don't see mayors come in and completely clean house. You know, Johnny Timmons has been director of water and light quite a while through many mayors. Kim Hanna, chief finance officer. Well, she was city clerk when Mayor Shelton came into office, and then when Lynn Norris retired as chief finance officer, they merged the finance officer and clerk position. But so Kim Hanna has been in an appointed position prior to Shelton's tenure. you know, the fire chief has been there a while. Yeah. So, yeah.
And alternatively, some of these did adapt as a result of Shelton, the placement of Shane Hooper as development services director, and as you said, the city attorney being in-house.
That's right.
Position now.
Yeah, probably the highest level position that Mayor Shelton changed when he came to office was chief operations officer, which not necessarily a surprise. That's kind of the mayor's right-hand man, so to speak, kind of really about implementing the mayor's agenda there. So he elevated Parks and Rec director Don Lewis to that chief operations officer position. Don Lewis is going to be sticking around if the council gives its okay on that.
And when will that be?
Depends on when he formally puts the nominations before the council. You know, according to state law, these positions have to be reappointed, even if you're planning to keep the same person, but there's not necessarily a timeline. You know, when he was elected in 2013, he kind of took the summer, Mayor Shelton did, and most of those positions went up before the council, I believe in late August or early September. And it looks like we're on track for maybe an early August vote this time around.
And as you said, with no changes to the council happening either, it should be business as usual.
Should be, yes.
All right. Anything else we should know, Caleb?
Keep on keeping on.
All right, then. Thanks for coming in today.
All right. Sure thing, Derek.
And now we're joined by Scott Morris, husband of Michaela Morris, who was here as well today. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. How about yourself?
I'm doing well, sir. Thank you. Hey, you got to write about fashion this past week, which is, I don't know how often you've written about that, but it was,
you know,
cool.
When I came on board here in 19 I had to write twice a year. We'd write fashion stories for the fashion section. And I knew nothing about fashion then. I know a little bit more about it, but I still don't let it infect my life. I'm not really a fashion-oriented person. But I like to dig into new things, and sure. I found out that Mississippi State has a fashion design and merchandising program. And I thought, Mississippi State, I wasn't thinking along those lines.
Yeah, you think of them as agriculture and engineering.
And engineering, exactly. And turns out it comes out of the agricultural tradition of like, and I should have known this because as soon as they said this to me, you know, the 4-H programs have sewing and home economics and
sure,
stuff.
Sure.
That's been a part of like a 4-H and Mississippi MSU Extension Service from the beginning.
Right.
And so the fashion does grow out of the agricultural program.
Yeah.
And it was interesting because of somebody, again, who's not, I'm not really aware of the fashion world. And so I was totally ignorant as I was learning all this stuff. I was like, they, you know, like something like the a trade deal matters to people in fashion.
Yeah.
Because how much it costs to get your cotton from here to there or your finished piece from here to there.
Yeah.
So that kind of, so NAFTA and the, And the TPP deal and all of that Trans-Pacific Partnership deal that was scuttled, all that kind of matters to people at this level, on to people who are in this industry.
Yeah.
And also, I came. Mississippi State has recently been ranked by an organization for having like the 5th best program in the South.
Wow.
And for fashion design and the 9th best for fashion merchandising. And also for fashion merchandising, 37th in the nation for that. And then for design, 34th in the nation.
Wow.
So kind of moving up. And this fall, they're starting with a master's degree program. So there's a lot of cool stuff to find out about.
And they like cover like a wide range of things within fashion. I mean, you can train to do a variety of jobs, whether it's working in a store or designing clothes. I mean, just about anything, right?
Oh, exactly. I mean, it can be design. I mean, you know, you can, this kind of stuff, well, what you learn there, they'll say will apply to other retail situations.
Yeah.
I mean, you can be a buyer or you can represent a line at market. You know, that's one thing I learned about covering fashion stories is like when you're buying your fall fashion, somebody went and bought it like 6 or 8 months ago to prepare for this season. And then the person they bought it from had designed and manufactured it. All that process went even further back. So the styles of this fall are things that are a year or more old as far as in the planning stages.
Sure.
As people work on it. And at every stage from like, from buying fabric to manufacturing, to designing, to manufacturing the thread, the clothing, the garments, all of that applies. So yeah. It was an interesting program. And then here's the thing. There are people like, I don't know when you decided to work for a newspaper, when you decided to be a writer, but something to me was of interest for quite some time, probably since I was 14. But I came across a couple of young women who were in the program, and both of them, since their elementary school days or even before, have been fascinated by the idea of making their own clothes and how people present themselves by what they wear. And one of them was lucky enough that her sister found out about the program, so she went straight into the program, and the other, she did not find out about the program, because she was already studying business administration. And she was at a community college and was told about the program and said, wait a minute, that's where I have to be.
Yeah.
So there's a number of people here who are, this is where they belong.
Yeah.
And about 34 students, I believe they're still, they went to Italy and France to further their educations about fashion and art.
That's where you want to go when it comes to fashion, I imagine.
You know what's interesting, though? It is, and one of the people I talked to is a professor of, she's a professor of art, mm-hmm. and she also runs the costume collection that Mississippi State has. And she was saying she had them look at clothing throughout human history, looking back to looking from the Egyptians.
Yeah.
And about how styles from that era get returned to this era. And so one of the things they're looking at when they go over there, certainly look at art and be like that, but they have like specific things to learn, like this collar or that neckline or whatever it is, to like see how the past still can influence the present of fashion, which quite frankly, as somebody who's never been that involved in it, except for writing those stories and learning about what's going on these days, the depth of stuff to study was I find it very interesting.
And this program at Mississippi State, they deal a lot with technology and how that applies to what they do.
Yeah, well, certainly like a lot of software they learn, all the updated software. Sure. But one of the professors, Professor Black, she had designed firefighting clothing, and she designed a ballistic vest.
Yeah.
And so her deal was, how does it fit? How does it look? How does it mold to a person's body? But she worked with an engineer in the engineering department on the fabric.
Yeah.
And so a collaboration. They would expect that would be one era. What will happen with the master's degree program? More of collaboration between different disciplines.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you. You think fashion doesn't matter to me, but one of the things that the students did in this one fellow's class is Drake Waterfowl has a line of water-repellent clothing. And different items cost more, depending on how water-repellent they are.
Yeah.
And that annoys customers. why is this shirt $80 and this shirt is $40?
Yeah.
What the heck, man?
Yeah.
And so they went to state to kind of come up with a rating system to kind of clearly explain why you're paying more for this and less for that, what the value is.
Yeah.
Now, that hasn't been instituted, but it's something that they designed and presented, and it may still be instituted. So I'm not saying that they've actually created something that's actually in working, but they got that real world experience.
Exactly, and that's important. And there's something here. They've worked with the Target on something as well. I mean, this is kind of the real world experience you can't get in a classroom. Like, I got a journalism degree, which was good, and I learned stuff, but like, it's just not the same as actually working at a newspaper, which is where I really learned most of what I
from all the other retrobates in the industry.
Right, exactly. Yeah. That's I don't know how many other programs offer that sort of real world hands on experience, but that to me would seem like a huge deal to be able to work with companies and stuff like that.
Yeah, and it's and again, it goes beyond being a sales associate. Not there's anything wrong with that, but
right.
But that's an option. And there are also these all these other options that people don't always look for and know to look for.
Yeah.
And it's something that always fascinated me. But one of the things that in journalism, been in this job all this time, you know, one of the things over the years always fascinated me is how they found their place. You know, how'd you find the work you do?
Sure.
And you know, you find people who fall into it, just kind of, oh yeah, it just worked for me. Mm-hmm. Or you find people like some of these people who were the young ladies who were you know, already had the passion from childhood and didn't really know that it was necessarily an option until they found out. And then they just found their place.
Yeah. That's a really cool program MSU has there. The story ran in Sunday's Journal. You can find it at djournal.com as well. Scott, as always, appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me in on a what is today, actually?
On a Wednesday, yeah.
Yeah, on a Wednesday.
Not usually having you on a Wednesday.
No, you guess usually, be back Friday. Usually don't care about my Sunday stories. You usually sniff your noses at them and move on.
You'll still come back Friday, though, right?
I don't know. It depends on how I feel.
Oh, okay. We'll see. Thanks.
Good show, Brad.
Pat?
Good show, Brad.
I'm not going to do a British accent.
Good show.
I can't. I don't know. No. Yeah, it was. It was a packed show. We had four guests. We had ghost stories. We had all kinds of fun stuff.
Yeah, we had your cracker problem that we need crackers. To address. Yeah. We're going to get to the bottom of that and get you some help.
What's soon. That, saltines?
Yeah.
I don't want any help.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem. You have a problem.
Lower your voice. Brought some people in to help wave them on in like the ghosts.
You know, we should invite the ghost in next time to be on the show.
Oh, yeah. Up next.
We just bring Ellie in to talk about it.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea.
Ellie is still learning how to talk. But
you know, with the children, wherever she goes, the ghost will go. So.
Exactly. That's what I'm thinking.
And Ellie would translate. We would need Ellie to translate.
Well, her translation would be, that's what she does.
Yeah, did the boys ever do anything weird or unexplained?
I mean,
your children
certainly done plenty of weird things.
Well, yeah, but like,
but I don't know that they've seen any ghosts.
The unexplained, not just why is that on your head? Kids. Yeah,
right. I'd say more the former than
but nothing, right. Nothing creepy.
Not that I can think of. Yeah, none of our other children. You got a good story with Wesley?
One time, I had some guys over when we were playing poker, and she was two, maybe? I don't know. I don't even know if she even was two. She was talking pretty well, though, like complete sentences. And so I think she may have been a little bit younger, but we were playing at the table, and she just walked up to me and goes, "Daddy, who's upstairs?" I was like, well... Not me anymore, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah.
I think the air handler came on, and that's what she heard, because it would, you know, the belt, it would cycle for a minute before that you'd actually hear the air conditioning come out of the... Yeah. Yeah. So,
we'll get a lot of Daniel coming in the middle of the night and saying, there's a ghost in my room.
Who's at the edge of my bed?
Yeah.
This is really our only child to have this kind of stuff going on. I told that one story.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. I remember you telling a story in the cemetery in Oxford.
About Deanna in the cemetery when she started singing Amazing Grace and crying for no reason after we left the cemetery, because we take our walks through the cemetery there.
I mean, one in, 18 children, and you've met the quota.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I think so. Tune in next time to hear more ghost stories about
haunted
house.
Yeah, in the meantime, you can catch us online at memo.djournal.com or on Twitter at djournalmemo. And the stories discussed today you can find in your daily journal or online at djournal.com. And also follow us on Twitter at djournalnow.
Yes.
Yeah.
There we go. Okay. We'll be back on Friday.
Some of us.
You, Jenna, and Scott, I guess.
Sure.
Per usual.
That is, if the ghost lets you out.
What?
Goodbye.
Okay, bye.